Welcome to the DJMCloud.com podcast with me, Daniel J. McKeown, and with Jessica.
Hi, everybody.
So we have some cool stuff that's happened lately, and then we all talk about some other stuff.
Sounds great. Cool stuff and other stuff.
Yeah. Well, do you think the new iPhone 4S is cool? Just announced today, as we record this, October 4th, 2011.
I think it's an upgrade to the current phone. If you don't have an iPhone, now's the time to get one. But if you do have an iPhone and you love it like I do, I would just stick with the iPhone you have.
Yeah, you have an iPhone 4, so you think that'll keep working for you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could see that. So the announcement didn't have too much other news other than that. I guess we'll be able to share our impressions of iOS 5 and stuff like that when we use it. But we haven't been on the developer beta or anything, so we're still using iOS 4 right now.
What do you think of the announcement?
Yeah, well, I agree with what you said. I think, the apps, there were a couple apps I wanted to talk about for iOS. There was this one called Dolphin Browser. And you used that briefly, right?
Very briefly.
Yeah, it's one of those alternative browsers. I don't know if it's quite as cool as that Atomic one that Jim told me about that I liked. But it's kind of nice. It has in some ways a Chrome-like interface, but on the mobile, I guess it was an Android app first. It's one of those relatively rare Android apps that makes the trip over to iOS, but it's free and I think it's fairly cool, so it's worth trying out. What did you think?
Yeah, I think it's always nice to have an alternative browser.
That browser and that Dolphin browser, how did that rate compared to using the native Safari?
I liked it. I thought it was fast, clean, very Chrome-like.
Yeah, and it's obviously, as a lot of the geeks are going to know, it's going to have basically the same web rendering engine as Safari, but it's going to have a different feel. Now, I think there's another iOS app that I did want to mention, and this is a game. It's called Snail Domino. It's a pretty cool game. It has portrait orientation, which is like Cut the Rope, say Angry Birds. It's up and down, so it's easy to play, you know, when you're standing and holding it. But it has a snail you drop, and then it bounces around and hopefully knocks over enough dominoes, and then you use these things that I guess they kind of look like ghosts that you arrange them to bounce the snail off. And use that to knock down dominoes. And I guess it's a pretty cool game.
Yeah, the ghosts are like a modern version of the sort of cloud ghosts from Mario.
Yeah, or the ghosts from Pac-Man, I guess.
Yeah.
And I think it's kind of a mellow game, right? It's got a different kind of vibe, but I enjoy it, and I think it's a buck or two. It's pretty cool. So that's the one game I've probably been playing a little bit more than other games.
Yeah, it's a fun like puzzle game to try to figure out where to drop the snail. It's got some of the levels look like Plinko from The Price is Right, where you know the snail could bob this way or that way, and you hope he bobs one way and knocks down all the dominoes, so it's a nice, relaxed game.
Yeah.
If you're looking for something new, I think it's worth a dollar or two.
Cool. I want to introduce what the music we're going to listen to when we go to this break. We have queued up a song by my Screambird project. It's a trance music side project that I have, and this new track is the second track by Screambird, and it's called No Sleep. I like trance music. I sort of have my own like kind of take on it, but I wanted to do something that had a an electronic kind of sound. This is maybe has a little more of a classic electro sound or something. But I had a lot of fun making it, and you can hear the birds in it a bit, and Jessica had some really interesting and worthwhile feedback at times. So please check out this track by Screambird, and we'll talk to you after the break. Yeah, actually, that video is available because I put the Screambird videos in the PacificPelican.us podcast. So you can check that out by going to PacificPelican.us/podcast. And you can also find it at my YouTube page, youtube.com/user/PacificPelican. And I think the video actually is it kind of goes it kind of works with the song, and I did have a lot of fun videotaping that, and as an appearance by you in it. You look very beautiful in it. I really like that part. It has some cool animals in it, and then it's got some kind of dark, gritty Cleveland nighttime kind of shots, and I think it goes with the twists and turns of the song fairly well, and that video was pretty fun. Making video for No Sleep, I did it with Final Cut Pro 10, and it was a very interesting process doing that with my Sony HD camera and Final Cut Pro 10, and the other video, Fly Away video, the other Screenbird video was a project done on Adobe Premiere, also with the Sony HD camera. So I think it was cool, and I do kind of think they both have their strengths. So I think it's pretty cool for putting down some markers for Cleveland trance music, right? You know, we got a little scene here. But of course, you know what? I'm really excited right now about writing some songs for Neater 2, because I want to write some nice guitar driven songs to play with my Telecaster and have you sing some rock vocals on that. And then of course you're coming up with cool songs, mostly writing on your iPad, using that as like a tool, and working on a solo album. So we have cool stuff coming up on DJM Cloud. Music recordings or whatever, like, you know, our label is called.
Yeah, I think the fall will be a productive time. We've had a lot of fun experiences and lots of stuff to write about, and as the weather turns to freezing cold,
in Ohio,
we can
for sure
stay inside and write some music and record some music.
Yeah, and you know what, I think that's a good reminder of how I want to, I'm going to put a link in the show notes to the Lake Michigan trip photos, because we took a really nice trip together around Lake Michigan, seeing a lot of amazing things along the shoreline, Oconee, Wisconsin, Big Bay, Dinock, Mackinac Island, Traverse City, and then down around the lake. It was a very, very nice trip for our second wedding anniversary, and I think you should check out the photos. They're very, very beautiful. Both beautiful pictures of sunsets, beautiful pictures of Jessica, and some nice photos of some beachside, you know, lighthouse kind of photos. Like really, really nice stuff. You can find our show notes at djmcloud.com. Yeah, you know, I guess I always change the name of this podcast every once in a while, but for a while it was the DJMblog.com podcast. But if you go there, well, you click on the podcast tag on the left, and then you read the top of it. It says how to subscribe and where the new page is. If you go to DanielJMcKeown.com, which is what I started calling the podcast, you know, that's fine. Then you just click on blog or subscribe to podcast. But if I say DJMcloud.com, that goes right to the blog front page, from where you can see the podcast content and subscribe and see the show notes. All right, and so now the meta section is done, and we're really, you know, there's one other little area that I wanted to delve into before we take off, and that is trends in social networking. Kind of a nebulous area, but, you know, Jessica, being on with us offers a great opportunity to talk about any kind of social media, social networking. Jessica is a guru in that area. she's a high powered individual in that scene. Now, of course, you know, she laughs, but she can afford to laugh. That just shows you. The thing about it is, there's some interesting changes going on. Now, this is sort of minor, sort of inside geek stuff, but maybe if you listen to this podcast, you know you're paying attention to this stuff anyway. Delicious, you know, formerly known as Delicious, and then Delicious.com, a social bookmarking site. You could uh, You could share links, basically. You could have a list of you could have your own homepage that was a list of links, and then you could share those links with other users. And so in some ways, it was a substitute for the bookmarks section, a bookmarks tool of your browser. And in some ways, it was a social sharing tool in the same kind of mold as a blog in some ways, or what Twitter is used for now. But it was, I guess, largely superseded by both Twitter and services like Xmarks and even Google Chrome, allowing people with Google accounts to at the very least sync their bookmarks across Chrome browsers. There's a lot of other alternatives to sync your bookmarks now. And Delicious had a cool run. They had a good run. They were founded, during the kind of the height of or the early kind of rise of the Web 2.0 trend, and then they were bought by Yahoo. And then Yahoo didn't really do too much with them, slowly brought them along. And then they were recently sold off by Yahoo after it was kind of leaked that Yahoo was planning to get rid of them. They were sold off to the founders of YouTube, I think. The two guys who were the main founders of YouTube who used to work at Google. I don't know if they still do, but they're also now doing this. They're doing Delicious as part of their new venture.
And are they keeping it as social bookmarking?
I think they're keeping a lot of the aspects of the site, but you had to do agree to a terms of service changeover.
Mm-hmm.
So unless people who were users made a proactive move to change over their accounts were deleted. I fall into that camp. Not out of some like absolute sense that these guys aren't going to do things right, but the terms of service were changing. I just didn't really invest the time to learn about it, and I just kind of punted, and it never really took much action, and my account ended up getting deleted. Of course, you know me, I exported my data. Now, Delicious has a tool you could use to export your data. It broke one time when I tried to use it. I tried to use it a few days later. This was right after I heard that Yahoo was going to get rid of it. I lost confidence in the site. I stopped using it, and I exported my data. So I have some XML files saved somewhere in my files that, you know, I could dig around and find it if I wanted to. But it's I have the bookmarks archived. But I don't really see it as that essential, like in terms of an ongoing service, because I basically use, you know, sync my bookmarks in Chrome right now. But even then, I guess the idea of social bookmark sharing has really moved mostly to the area of Twitter, and for a lot of people, Facebook, and some people are using Google Plus as well, stuff like that, right?
Yeah, I mean, what I liked about Delicious was, you know, the ability to tag things, organize.
Yeah.
There was a little bit more of a storage, and I think what has probably, in my opinion, taken over Delicious in that sense is Pinterest. Do you know about Pinterest?
I think I've heard of that, and I think that there's another site. It sounds like a similar name. I'm just going to throw it out there, though, because I'm thinking about it. There's a site called pinboard.in, I think, that other people have started using as an alternative to Delicious. But tell me about Pinterest, because I feel like I've seen one or two of the people I follow on Twitter using it, at least for a while they were.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely is geared more towards, I would say, females, and then image heavy people who identify with images, whereas Delicious, which was, I think, sort of run by the tech community, it was okay to be in that sort of very basic, plain format, not a lot of design and style to it, just more informational, get through it, tag it, bubble things up, you know. Pinterest is all image-based, and you collect images of things, and you organize it into categories. So, for example, Vitamix is on there, and the name of the pin board is, you know, Things I Want, or For the Kitchen, or, you know, My Dreams. You can do fashion. You can do stuff for your home. You can do stuff for your kids. You can do baking and cooking. So it's collecting all these images. And my understanding is you grab a URL, but it's going to suck in images from that URL. So you respond to the cupcake photo or the blue pair of shoes, you click through that to then go to Nordstrom.com where you found those shoes. But that's, it's a visual way of organizing, which I think is very interesting.
I think that there's a lot of advancements and new ideas in that area. And Delicious didn't evolve very fast. And there are some interesting new alternatives. And even, there's sites that you don't know if they're really a replacement exactly or not. Maybe they are for what people were doing, i.e. sharing stuff. But from a technical standpoint, maybe they don't seem like that. And that's why there's the geekier solutions, and then there's the more, interesting or metaphorical kind of sites with pictures and stuff like that. So, yeah, I think that's awesome that there's the new stuff. I'll have to start looking into that site. Although you said it's sort of women heavy, huh? That's the group it kind of appeals to?
Only because I think women tend to be more visual.
Okay.
But I don't know. Maybe men are too.
Okay.
I think when I compare it to Delicious, which this seems very similar to, I feel like Delicious was more male dominated and tech dominated.
Yeah, that could be. So, I think that there's a site that we've been talking about that instituted a change that's sort of strange recently. Spotify. I use them. They just recently announced that in order to have a new account, you have to use a Facebook login. And that's the only way to create a new account. So I think that's what do you think of that change?
Before you could create your own account with them?
Yes.
So here's my only thinking. If I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt, they have exploded and they probably don't have the staff or scalability maybe to manage a database of a lot of new users.
Yeah, you know, that sounds reasonable, but I don't think that it's really possible to reduce overhead much with using Facebook Connect. Maybe it is, but I think essentially they're going to run their own login system and then go check Facebook for credentials. I don't think Facebook is offering like an end-to-end solution for them. I think that they're pushing the social features to the front because Spotify is a subscription music service that has a free version and a lower cost limited version. But it's basic, like a subscription service is $10 a month, like RDIO.com, RDO, and some other sites. They basically offer you $10 a month, and you have a lot of the major label music from the last 40 years on available to stream. And the thing that you can do is share your playlist in Facebook. You can do that. I know RDO has some social features, and a lot of these do. And you know, Microsoft has Zoom Pass, and there's Rhapsody, and there's these different services. But the kind of hip ones at the moment seem to be Spotify and RDO. And Spotify, they want people to put Spotify in their social stream, because didn't Facebook just recently announce that they are going to make it easy for people to log in using Facebook and then to broadcast all the events from that site into their Facebook stream. So they want people, I think, to log in with Facebook, and then automatically maybe a lot of those sharing features will be turned on and they have to go maybe manually turn them off, or maybe they'll just convince people to turn them on. And then all of a sudden people's Facebook streams are filled with saying, well, this person, you know, is listening to the Smiths, but they're listening to them, you know, on Spotify. And so there's a link to Spotify in like people's Facebook stream, and people are sharing playlists. I think that's the angle. That must be, right, in some ways.
Yeah, I mean, Spotify in bed with Facebook is, I think, definite sort of end to MySpace. Like, nail in the coffin, like,
and to a definite end to MySpace.
Yeah, because it's like, and we're gonna take over social music sharing again.
Because MySpace used to kind of have that as one of their relative strengths, even as they lost to audience others. That's true. Even just maybe a year or two or three ago, you would see myspace.com/artist name. For in band posters, and I think less and less you see that. And now Facebook, I've noticed, has like artist pages that are very similar to the way MySpace had it, where you can have music that plays for people, and people can then just, like, you know, use that on Facebook. And then of course there's sites like Bandcamp, and there's sites like out there that you know, podcasts. That there's a lot of ways that music can get out there. But I think you're right. I think Spotify, especially for anyone who's on a major label, because that's what they tend to have. They tend to have even relatively obscure stuff, but on major labels. I don't, you know, that's, they all, RDO and Spotify claim like 10 million songs. Like, it's about the size of the catalog, I think, of like the big labels, you know, for the last handful of decades. Like, you know, it's, so that's another thing I'd like to see eventually, is them working like really indie stuff on the web, stuff that's, you know, I don't know, you know what I mean? Independent artists on the web, because a lot of people are bypassing the labels in general. So eventually, some of the cool new stuff you might hear on the web, see on YouTube, may not be on Spotify and RDO if they don't expand the circle of, like, labels and artists that they work with.
Did they offer any explanation to the change?
You know, I think they probably wrote something on their blog or something, but if I remember seeing like a very short news flash about it, they were being, I think, fairly disingenuous, if I could venture an opinion, because they were saying like, this is for customer convenience, you know, you can just have one account, you know, just with Facebook, you know, which maybe makes sense, like, in some theoretical way, but a lot of people like to just, you know, they've gotten used to managing a whole bunch of different accounts with different sites, and then at least they feel like they're managing the account directly with that company instead of having Facebook as an arbiter. And I know that there are people out there that are going to say, you know, I know this is a personal experience. People are going to say that, you know, that sounds like a cool service, and then, oh, well, I don't like using Facebook. It's not my thing, you know, so they're not likely to use Spotify. So they, I mean, I don't know, you know, if this is a big enough group, and if maybe they must have looked into it, right? Because I mean, okay, so they, I don't know, because I still have an account, at least for now, you know, that isn't linked to Facebook, you know, but you can't get a new account like that. So that's where I am. But in terms of you know, companies doing stuff that makes their customers question stuff, what about Netflix? We definitely thought that's happening. That's been discussed just so thoroughly, though. Everybody knows about that. I mean, right? I mean, unless you have anything, you could throw out anything that you want out there. Otherwise, it's just, I don't know. I think everything's been said about it.
I'm just saving both of those emails as the two worst ways to do communication to members.
Yeah, classic just terrible communication.
In history.
The Netflix CEO emails.
The first email from sort of Netflix saying, here's the changes. And then the second email being like, oh, hey, by the way, all those changes we made, here's why we're doing it. And we're still saying screw you. So, you know.
Yeah, it was. They made things even worse. They just started digging deeper. They started with the half-assed apology, and they ended by doing an even more extreme version of what they did last time, splitting apart the two things and then even renaming it. Like, that doesn't change anything. It just makes it more annoying.
And I don't really understand what happens to companies, because, I mean, I've been a Netflix member since 2001, so over 10 years I've been.
You've been a loyal member.
Supporting this, but they haven't been loyal to you. Enjoying the service, and you know, I was really excited when they got streaming, and they got quicker with their, you know, DVDs. They opened up more warehouses. Like, it was just, it was getting better and better and better, and you know, to just see them handle a transition so poorly. And to not really think about, you know, the consumers and what they like and why they're subscribing in the first place. It was all about money. You know, that's really what it was about. And it's like, you know what? I'm going to take my money somewhere else. And I will, you know, like, I can go to Apple TV. I can go to my direct you know, cable box here. I can go to the Apple TV.
You know, does have Netflix built in. So Netflix was a lot of TVs, not ours, have Netflix built in. So I know what you're saying. No, I agree. But I know what you're saying, and I agree totally with what you're saying. I think their angle on it is that they think the money, like you said, the money in the future is going to be in the streaming, and they want to concentrate on building that service up, where sometimes that service is disappointing and it doesn't have a lot of movies. So they want to build the Netflix streaming up, make it Netflix, and make it the streaming version, which is being built into a lot of stuff, and concentrate on strengthening that service. And they're pushing the DVD by mail service off as far as possible into another company called Quixtar and all that ridiculous stuff, and making it a separate bill. And they want to push that off on, you know, and maroon it and leave it behind and just go off to the next, you know, to the next day with just having a streaming, you know, service. And whether that's worth having, I mean, in some ways, you know, it has some good stuff on it, but it also has a lot of limitations, right? It has, you know, stuff comes on and off it,
yes.
And it doesn't have all the latest stuff, and it's hard to find stuff on it sometimes.
Well, and this is a message to all content distributors: make your shit streaming. Okay, that's the future.
Yeah.
I am not. If I want to watch a really old, cool movie, I want to watch it now. I want to watch it at 10:20 at night.
Yeah.
And I want to watch it on my iPad, and then I want to finish it on my iPhone, and then I want to come home and watch the last part of the series on the TV, and then I want to watch it on my computer. So we don't care about the devices. Consumers are expecting things to just flow seamlessly, especially when it comes to their content. They're consuming wherever, whenever. When they have that moment to consume and they've got a device in their hand, your content better be able to be read on it.
They just have all these different content owners, all these different disputes over content. And the fact is, the contracts that all these, and the copyrights and all this things that the system that these movies were made under, they're talking about these classic movies, never anticipated this kind of a distribution. So contracts are either ambiguous or don't account for these things. So, you know, at least the litigation. I mean, it's one of those things that's a great point. It's just that the entertainment industry seemed to have designed ownership of, well, and not only that, but copyright law designs ownership in such a bizarre way. Like, for example, music, right? The fact that there's a composer copyright and the performer copyright, and, you know, you need both of these to do a lot of things. So there's so many, you know, blockers in getting certain things done with, you know, music and stuff. It's just, well, I don't even understand these issues very well, but, you know, it seems like there's a lot of stuff like that, though, and it kind of slows all that stuff down. So there are people that want to change that, you know, because they know there's money in it. So that's the, you know, and then there's the foolishness of windowing, and they still think, like you're saying, they still think you're gonna go to it in the medium that they expect. Like, you're going to go sit in a stupid theater and watch it. And then you're going to go and you're going to buy it on a DVD. Because remember, Netflix, couple years ago, agreed, a rule like forced to have DVDs a month late or 2 months late or something. Because they really think that there's all these people that are going to, what, see it at the movie theater, buy it, and then get it through Netflix or something like that, and they're going to slowly or they're going to rent it in between then. You know, like, there's a, I think that, yeah, I think it's more, I think that's obviously kind of crazy, but they're into that idea that, oh, well, you know, people's tapes, you know, are old now. They want to buy CDs, right? That's how, like, the record industry made money in the 90s. And now, like, I mean, you know, in the movie industry, it's like it had a similar success with DVDs in a lot of ways. And now they haven't really found anything to replace DVDs. So that's the real problem. Movie attendance, I think, was down this year now for the first time in a while. It had been going up, but, I mean, it seems to be down. And it doesn't seem like, if you had to guess, don't you think it could be, the slump could be starting with movies, like, or attendance is going down. People are kind of sick of theaters and how people are so hyperactive these days that either people don't want to sit in the theater the whole time and they think, well, this is annoying to just sit here for 2 hours and not be able to, I don't know, you know, text my friends or, you know, get up and get a drink and not miss a bunch of stuff. On the other hand, maybe I'm not saying it's true for all of them, but it's sort of a stereotype, like teenagers, they'll just keep texting and keep, you know, doing whatever, like during the movie. And it's just, it's annoying. Like even people that are like adults aren't going to are kind of too hyperactive these days to want to sit in the theater, or too busy maybe, or think they're too busy. But then other people, you know, kids can't sit still these days. So it's just not a good experience, I don't think, to go to the movie theaters, you know.
It's not. And I think more and more people are going to want to have that instantaneous live experience where they choose, not where the content publisher decides. And that's the shift. They're like, you want to watch this movie? You come to this theater. And the audience starts saying, well, then I don't want to go to that theater, so I'm not going to watch a movie. And then sales start to dwindle, and then maybe the movie producers will realize we should do live streaming shows of the newest movie. Kids can sit around and watch it. Do they have a lot of things to figure out? Yes. But is that ultimately where we're going? Yes.
Well, yeah. And now, and with new content, they don't have any excuse. I mean, you can just get the stakeholders now to sign contracts that allow it to be used in innovative ways and distributed in different ways. Everybody gets more out of it. I think you could find some people who would get that, you know, but you know, probably not the big decision makers still.
Yeah. But if we go back to the question about Spotify and the Facebook account, it'll be very interesting to see where that gets them. So I'll keep an eye on it. I think it's an interesting move.
So I think there's a site that just caught my interest. I can't really figure it out, and I was telling you about it a little bit this evening. Like we were talking, and I don't know. Like I don't get it. It's the site lockers.com with a Z, and it seems like you see people who use it to post their pictures to Twitter, like TwitPic. Or YFrog, or Instagram, is really popular now to do that. And you see people using lockers, and you're like, wait, why would you use that instead of like something really standard like YFrog or Posterous or something, or something like that's kind of trendy like Instagram or Camera Plus's, you know, sharing site, you know, just something that's you know I don't know what certain geeks think of as like a cool kind of hip site to share stuff. You know, well, apparently some people use Lockers, and Lockers is a site that appears to be geared at selling people stuff basically by promising them points, or as they refer to them, PTZ. And these points apparently are used to redeem for prizes, or probably more accurately, redeem for discounts on prizes. So they have like a Beats by Dr. Dre headphone, and it says Lockers priced on this about page I was reading, $2.99. And then after you get all these points by, I guess, what, uploading photos, viewing videos that they select, so there, that's just like obvious product placement and other types of things, opportunity, and then there's other things you do, and you earn these, you know, PTZ or whatever, and then you can redeem them for some discount, some percentage off, so you're only paying $225 for your headphones, or something like that. And I'm like, well, okay, so you're selling stuff. They could probably buy it even without the points, right? So you're just selling stuff, but then you can use the points, but not really to get stuff for free, just to get a discount, a perceived discount at the very least. I was saying perhaps you get it for less on Amazon. Anyway, I don't know. And then they're pushing videos on you and giving you points for that. And then I guess I had heard some dark rumors about terms of service of different sites and what they claim they can do with your photos. I'm not going to say which site I heard those rumors about, but overall, like, I don't understand then, you know, what makes people want to post their site, their photos at lockers.
I would say probably just ease and convenience.
They see their friends posting it, and it seems to work as a photo sharing site. It's the photo sharing site they saw their friend use. That's my guess. Most of it is just people, the same way a lot of people early on saw TwitPic or YFrog and just started using that. Or maybe there were apps built into people's Twitter clients. That's how some people have come into using different apps. I don't know if there's any Twitter clients that use lockers as an option. But yeah, what I thought was kind of funny was that they pointed to an article where the CEO of lockers was using, like, just, I was reading it to you, Jessica, just like an attack of trendy marketing buzzword shenanigans, I think.
Talking about Gen Z.
Yeah, and I don't know. I feel like it's like they're saying all this stuff about this quote unquote Gen Z, and I'm thinking to myself, they can't really be that dumb, can they?
Well, some of them are only 1 year old. So.
Yeah, right. It goes up to 2010, 92 to 2010. You're really talking about that quote unquote generation. Now, first of all, that's like an absurd construct, one of the great absurd constructs, the idea of a generation and a cohesive narrative that could be affixed to millions of people scattered around, you know, like, but besides that, I mean, I think they use grains of truth, this Gen Z marketing that Lockers represents. I think they use grains of truth, but in the guise of falsehood, or maybe that's not the right way to put it, but I think like they're being very disingenuous. There was a line about how they have a sense of individuality, but like, you know, like they are still, they're going to want to buy stuff that their friends recommend. You know what I mean? And so every single kid that age is going to be influenced by their peers? Are you serious? First of all. And then second of all, it is now an unknown event for anyone of that age to use independent judgment or conduct personal research on something. It's always friends' recommendations. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, what? I would think that older people, the older the person, the more likely they are to have a narrow kind of sense of only their friends recommending things. Like, you know, the Facebook, Spotify integration. You know, I don't even have that thing integrated. But I thought about it, I've never used friends as a source for, like, music. Like, there, a lot of people will use friends as their source for, like, the music. But there have to be some people in any group of friends who go broader than the particular group of friends' music listening habits if they're going to bring in new music. And I think that's often been my role. Like, I'll go to the Britpop, I'll get in really into the dance music when it's kind of not any more hipster trendy in Chicago, but not yet mainstream trendy. You know, and I'm a kid in high school, I'm still really into it because it's cool and it's blown up in Britain. And I was into the music from there. Like it's just, you know, if you, then you go and read like the British magazines and see that stuff. Like, well, maybe your friends don't know about that stuff, but then you do. And maybe you convince one or two of them that it's cool, and maybe a lot of them think it's lame. But it's like, you know what I mean? Like there's a different kind of discovery. And I don't think that there's a really young generation out there that they don't have people that are, you know, taking the information from the outside.
Right. And what I think is that we all do that. All generations are going to go and consult peers.
Very much so.
Right. But I think what the focus is coming down to is there's a heavier weight on that. So while some generations might ask their friend, hey, you know, what's a good guitar to get? you know, they might give you a starting ground for this, this, and this, but you're still going to go and do your research, go online, read some general reviews.
A lot more information out there now than
right. You're going to go and play and just figure out what you like, but it gives you that starting point. And I think more and more so, as people start to step out as influencers in certain areas, like you are an influencer of music, and I can think of a lot of my friends, that's what I liked them for, was music, because I don't have I have an interest in new music, but I like to hear what my friends are into. I like getting recommendations from them, you know, because it's a social thing. So I want to listen to what you're listening to so we can talk about it, go to shows together. That's how I engage with music socially. I want to sing with you, and I want to dance with you, and I want to, you know, talk about the band, and I want to go see them in a show. And so that's my relationship. That's why I like to have other people be influencers, because that's how I like to respond to music, is socially. So there's a lot of things out there, and certain people like to be really knowledgeable about things. And we here's the thing. Here's why I think it's going to be so important for this generation. They are going to be doing so many more things than we are. You know, we're multitasking now. I mean, there are 2-year-olds using computers. So they are going to be wanting to do a lot of different things. I don't think they're going to have the time to know all there is to know, right? Because now we're starting to see that there's so many things to know in the world. So we need to start having experts and people we know and trust give us the real information.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's so much music available online. They're gonna probably have to be curators for most listeners, and that's an important thing. And different people at different times will probably play that kind of role.
Because Generation Y already doesn't trust marketers, so that message is dead to them. You know, banner blindness, the whole sort of buying fans and followers. I mean, they are aware to this and awake to this, and, you know, they see right through it.
Well, that's a good insight. I think that's something that people are going to have to adjust to as that demographic gets a serious buying power, which I guess is happening. So I think if there's one more social network story, it hardly really even qualifies as a social networking story. But it's LinkedIn. LinkedIn just seems so lame. Let me tell you, I have an account there. Haven't really used it much. Think I'm going to delete it. Now, 2 little things I heard about LinkedIn recently. Didn't really dig very deep. Think these things are true. One thing is Obama visited them. Did he visit, like, I don't care. Did he visit a high school gym near them? Who cares? Like, some kind of visit to some kind of sop to the LinkedIn crowd. First of all, who cares? Like, what? I mean, you know, I have plenty of disagreements with Obama, but I mean, this seems like making a big deal out of a pretty small player. You know, President of the United States visits LinkedIn. Like, really? Like, you know, I mean, if he visited a tool and die company of the same size, like in Illinois or Ohio, it would probably be like, why is he going to this tiny shop? You know, like, I don't know, but actually maybe I'm underestimating LinkedIn. I guess they're listed. They're on the stock market. And then that brought me to the question, well, how is a social networking company making money? Or are they making money? Or what's going on here? What is going on? And apparently, I heard this, independent of the Obama visit, apparently they're making money by selling information about your profile. So you can say, oh, if you just set up a website, then you can get Google Analytics on and get information, and Google Analytics, at least for now, is free. Getting your site, well, you know, you put your site up, you pay for it, but then, you know, you basically, you know, own your web presence. But no, you can get LinkedIn, it starts free, and then you can pay to get information about who's visiting your profile, or something like that. Like, do you understand what I'm saying? Like, it's like one of those, like, you know, do you want to have the power LinkedIn experience? Power business douchebags? Well then, come on, wingtip wearing pig faces. It's time to pay more to LinkedIn. But apparently, you know, apparently these guys, you know, they have a stock on the New York Stock Exchange. I mean, hey, having a PE of 1,000, I mean, hey, if you can get that off the ground, you know, I guess. But I mean, it's dumb. So having already, I guess, prejudiced the whole conversation, I turn it over to you. What do you think?
I think right now it's the front runner in the business to business social networking. I think it's a good idea that they carve that niche out and realize that right away, rather than just being sort of an online job board kind of place, more of an online networking. So you meet people at conferences, you connect with them on LinkedIn, you can send messages, you know, stay in touch. I don't use it a lot.
And you're an active business person. I mean, I just don't, you have a lot of people in your network, and it just seems like you know what, is there enough traffic on it? Is there enough vibe? I guess it's a business or whatever, vibe is the right word, but is there enough energy? You know, is there, for example, what I've been wanting to know is, like, who is the highest ranking corporate chieftain on LinkedIn? Like, do you know what I mean? Like, I think there's more corporate big shots on Facebook or Twitter than there are on LinkedIn. I guess those are bigger networks, so that's fair. But it seems like a lot of people that are at the middle management level, a lot of people, younger people, young, ambitious people, young people that have climbed a long way are on LinkedIn in a lot of cases. But what about the veterans who've been around a long time and climbed a long way? Do they really need to go down into the LinkedIn basement? Do you know what I mean? Like, and if they don't, how are people going to get that, you know, that next job at a certain level? Or how are they going to, you know, are they going to use LinkedIn to get on the board of a company? Or is it just going to be to get into middle management at a company? And then you got to go, you know, inside, you know, the institutions there, you know, like, I mean, probably only, it's self-evident. You know, you gotta go to every individual company and get, you know, understand their culture and work within those parameters to a great extent. But, you know, I'm just wondering, it's worth $7 billion on the stock market, $7.28 billion. I mean, they must be, you know, they must be doing something that's getting people interested. And even with that huge valuation, they are making, well, apparently they're reporting some profit, even though it's 1,000 PE. I mean, it's still technically positive.
I mean, I think if not already, you know, businesses will form groups. That's where they can become an expert, and an expert in plastic wares, an expert in machinery of this sort or that sort, and network, you know, with other people and sort of establish themselves as the leader in that field. And, you know, I think there are some cases for LinkedIn for certain businesses where it really makes sense. I haven't done a lot of networking recently. I did do a little bit at the Connections concert, and I did make those connections, but I haven't used LinkedIn to engage with people. I actually kind of feel like annoyed. Like, it used to kind of look like an inbox, and it kind of reminded, like, there was always, like, things I had to do when I got there, and I felt like work, and that's why I stayed away from LinkedIn. Like, every time I got there, they're like, your profile is 75% complete. Oh. If you would just put, I'm like, no, I didn't want to fill it out the first time I filled out my profile. I still don't want to fill it out now. And now you're telling me that I'm not complete, you know, and it's just like,
I don't think I ever got beyond 40%. I know what you mean. It really, it's like a taskmaster when you, at least it was, I guess I think they've gone through several rounds of changes. I do think they're probably trying to update their interface, and there's no reason to think they can't probably offer a fairly competent social networking package, especially with that kind of money they have now. Like, but the question is, where's the audience? What are people, are businesses maybe going to have their own LinkedIn, you know, like, the employee LinkedIn page, you know what I mean? That there could be an angle for that. Maybe I'm thinking that's more likely than you say, you know, someone like you who works with people inside and outside your company and has worked at other companies and you keep up with those people, like, it's like, it just seems to me you're more likely to be using Facebook or your email or other things that are out there for your business networking. It doesn't seem like there's a necessary, like, I guess some people might say, well, I network with business on LinkedIn and personal on Facebook, but there's plenty of business people that you probably want to network with that are only on Facebook and not on LinkedIn, so you might break that rule that way. And then also, you know, I mean, there's might be people that you're kind of personally friendly with, but they're also a business, you know, partner. And you know, I mean, I guess, you know, the way a lot of people are these days, I don't know if that line is, you know, it's not as bright and clear as it maybe used to be in different eras. So I guess that's a great tour of the different social networking issues. And as always, you can find some more information about Jessica at jessica.sf3am.com. So thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
Cool. Well, I hope you enjoy the October 4th, 2011 edition number 13 of the DJMCloud.com podcast.